Hello, funky listeners. Welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. This is your host, Shaolin Kyle-tastic.
And this is Peter. Welcome to Funk Radio. This is a podcast where we talk about music, mostly funk music. And guess what? Netflix just released a series called The Get Down, which is basically completely in our wheelhouse, more or less.
Yeah. For those of you that haven't, I don't know, have been too busy binge-watching Stranger Things, there's another show on Netflix that got released at the same time called The Get Down. Let's take a trip back in the time,
1977. It was maximum crime. You're a natural wordsmith, man.
You're working for drug dealers.
You ever thought of quitting?
This ain't Disneyland, this is the Bronx!
Y'all pushing me to be who you want me to be. Nobody's asking what I want to be.
Show me what you got.
I just want to sing. I want to get out of the Bronx.
I can't let anybody distract me from that.
No daughter of mine is going to sing disco.
I will sing, Bobby, and you cannot stop me.
You're killing my lean soul.
The way I see it, all of us here on this planet, and we're on a journey, and it is a mystery.
It's about music, man. It'll move you forward and open up doors that everyone says are shut. It'll give you the whole world for free if you just hold back nothing.
Oh, you hear that? That is life and destiny. That is The Get Down.
Before we go any further, we should probably also say, if you have not watched the show,
spoilers abound.
There's probably going to be, it's going to be hard for us to talk about the show without spoiling stuff. So if you don't care about spoilers, then welcome. If you do, then leave. And then come back and listen to us later.
Yeah. I mean, I guess a spoiler-free synopsis of the show that I could probably give is it's about a young kid, Ezekiel, who is kind of thrust into this world, like burgeoning world of hip-hop, through this guy he meets, Shaolin Fantastic. And Shaolin kind of shows him the ropes of the underground rap scene, while at the same time, this girl, Mylene Cruz, I believe, who's the daughter of a priest, is kind of struggling with the duality of her wanting to become a disco singer with the rigid spirituality of her father being a priest and her being part of the church. Mm-hmm. And Ezekiel and Mylene kind of like each other, but I guess you'll have to watch the show to find out what happens. But yeah, I liked that because Mylene and Ezekiel kind of got equal screen time. It showed like the two sides of the music world in the 70s, the disco side and the rap side. Now, in the late 70s, disco was kind of dying or winding down, I guess. So it showed how rap, this new burgeoning music, adopted the dance beats of disco into their sets. So it kind of shows how the two were almost symbiotic in a way, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, and you know, this is something we've talked about in the past on this show somewhat in depth about the musical transition from disco music into hip-hop. The show really does depict that relationship between those two genres very well, and kind of the transition that was happening. I wouldn't say it shows the decline of disco at all, because throughout the entire, I guess it's only six episodes, you know, disco is, you know, the music that everyone listens to. But then hip hop is this thing that most people have never even heard of. And I don't think they even give it a name really in the show. But, you know, anyone who hears it, who has never heard it before, is like, well, what the heck is this? They're messing up the songs that I like, which is interesting because, I mean, like, that's kind of the first instances of sampling, you know, and for people who had never experienced hearing that before, I think it was very kind of confusing.
Yeah. I liked the scene where they got Mylene's pressing of her song with her little group that she made, and they wanted to use it as the breakbeat, and she's like, no, you're ruining the record.
I know, yeah.
She was like freaking out.
That was funny.
But yeah, it's funny. It shows how despite the two genres kind of like disco, I don't know, because rap was this new thing, disco aficionados or and owners or whatever were like, well, this music is shit. It's just noise. Mm. But rappers appreciated disco music for their beats. So it's kind of like one was appreciative of the other, but the other kind of didn't have any want the disco didn't have any respect for rap at the time.
Right.
But yeah, no, there's a lot of interesting characters in the show. Outside of just Ezekiel and Mylene, there's...
Can I interrupt for a second? I just want to say, so listeners, while the show does follow, like the general brushstrokes, you could say, of the show are based on actual historical events and people, the actual characters in the show and the things that happen, and even some of the songs that are created from the show are fictional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something we should discuss in itself. But if you want to discuss some of the characters first, that's completely fine. I just want listeners to know that in some cases there are actual historical figures. In other cases, most of the cases are actually not real, which is something that kind of threw me off for a little while.
Yeah, no, me too. No, that's a good lead in to talking about some of the characters, because some of them are loosely based off real people, even though they're not. And that, I know, watching the entire show, I kept trying to figure out, like, is this guy a real guy? Is this based off a real guy? Because it never straight up says, like, oh, these are based on real events.
Right.
It just plays it all out.
So for me going into it, I assumed that it was, like,
all real.
I assumed that it wasn't. I mean, like, obviously any depiction of something historical is going to be somewhat fictionalized. Mm-hmm. You know, and the characters and everything, but I went into it assuming that all these people were real, and that most, if not all the events, but most of the events happening were actual things that happened. And as the show went on, I kind of realized, okay, they seem to be taking some liberties, even though I wasn't completely sure what stuff was real, what wasn't. I could tell that some stuff probably was elaboration at the very least. But then at the end, I was, you know, doing a little bit of research and realized that, yeah, pretty much everything in this is not completely, you know, real. Most of it's fictional. But I think they did a really good job of weaving in the real historical events and stuff and a few scattered key characters like Grandmaster Flash with these fictional people and characters and things that are going on. I think they wove those together really strongly in a way that feels very real. I guess in a TV sort of way, without necessarily being like straight from the history books.
So yeah, one of the pervasive themes in the show, aside from music, is kind of the political corruption that went on inside and outside the Bronx, in different ways, either through drugs or through politics or through, you know, government contracting. Mm-hmm. But a couple of characters that I found interesting that are loosely based off, I guess, real people were Francisco Papa Fuerte Cruz, who is kind of a Puerto Rican godfather type figure within the Bronx. You know, he's influential and he makes things happen, you know, sometimes not always through the most legal of means.
I wouldn't say he's necessarily a political figure, but isn't he on some kind of board of something? Like, he does have some
influence,
but I don't remember what it is exactly.
I thought he was on some sort of like Puerto Rican community board or something. Maybe. A lot of politicians go to him because he's kind of the spokesperson for the community.
And he can get them their votes.
To vote one certain ways. Yeah, exactly. So in the outset of the show, he's trying to get funds from this the mayor for this sort of community development project he wants to build, you know, to help the horribly dilapidated, I guess, Bronx area. It's like a housing project, but he doesn't want to build, like, you know, shitty government apartment buildings. He wants to build, like, actual, like, kind of suburb-style houses, which is kind of cool. But what's funny is his character is based off a real guy named Ramon Velez, who, similar to in the show, was actually called a poverty pimp by the, I guess, not then Mayor Koch. In the show, I'm totally skipping over historical shit here. In the show, this guy Koch is running against Mayor Beam because no one likes Mayor Beam because, you know, they're in a shitty recession.
Yeah.
And this Koch guy is running against him in the late 70s. He wins, becomes mayor for a while. But in the show, he's still, you know, in the process. It's an election year for Beam, and Koch is running against him.
Mm-hmm.
And Koch calls Papa Fuerte a poverty pimp, which is funny because that event did happen where Koch actually called out Velez and said he's a poverty pimp.
That's funny.
But because of Velez, and I guess similarly Papa Fuerte's sort of nefarious connections, they were never able to really connect any criminal activity with him because he kind of was above all of that.
Hmm.
So Koch ended up rescinding his, I guess, insult later on because they never really got anything on him.
That's funny.
Kind of funny.
And that does speak, I think, to what you were saying. He's not really fully a good guy or fully a bad guy. I think when they first introduce him, he feels like a bad guy. But then as you get to know him more, he's actually like I think at his core, he's a good person. Mm-hmm. And he wants to do good things, especially for his family and for Mylene, who is his niece. So it is interesting to see. I would cast him as somewhat of a protagonist.
He's kind of a anti-hero. Like, he's a hero and he wants to help his community, yeah. But he doesn't care what means he does that. He uses to do it.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that makes him a really like three-dimensional character, and it's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. Another character that I thought was really weird and really isn't based off anyone, it was Fat Annie. She's supposed to be like this sort of drug kingpin in the show who's pushing heroin and cocaine in the Bronx.
Yeah.
What's funny is just even though, yeah, she's like a totally made-up character, I don't know why she makes me think of Auntie Annie's, pretzels or whatever. Like, that was her, like, legitimate business front or something, I don't know. But I remember in the show, they kept talking about her wanting to move in on this guy, Nicky Barnes, and his territory. Well, the funny thing is, Nicky Barnes was a real, like, drug kingpin in the 70s, and his territory was so large that he actually expanded his operations into Pennsylvania and Canada.
Jeez.
And in 77, actually was on the New York Times magazine cover with the headline "Mr. Untouchable," because
I think they refer to him as that in the show too.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a real event that they were, I guess, riffing off of.
So Fat Annie was kind of representing more, not as necessarily like prominent figures in history, but like a type of person who probably did exist in that area at that time.
Yeah, like a lower level drug pusher. Who,
yeah,
you know. Isn't you know, the king of the city or whatever, but
yeah. How about some of the main characters,
like Mylene and Ezekiel?
Yeah, I mean we talked about them briefly.
I still have not figured out who Ezekiel is supposed to be based off of.
Well, maybe we'll tie this back into what we were saying a few minutes ago about how, you know, some stuff we thought that certain things were real and some ended up not being. So a lot of my knowledge before watching this show of this whole sort of thing, what came from something else I've mentioned before in the show, the comic series, Hip Hop Family Tree.
Oh yeah.
I would say that's probably like 95% historically accurate and about 5% elaboration. So by comparison, it's a lot closer to what actually happened. But it has been probably a year and a half ish since I read it. Or about a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I would have to read it again because obviously some of that information kind of gets blurred after a while. But I think the reason that I thought some of this stuff was real was because, first of all, you know, they do throw in the more prominent names, I think, are all actual people like Grandmaster Flash, obviously, who is the mentor, I guess, to Shaolin. Fantastic. But they also mention Cool Herc, I believe. He was in
yep.
episode 5 or 6.
Yeah, the Jamaican guy.
Yeah, he was definitely one of like those top three or so people.
Top original guys.
Yeah. But the group name that the main characters come up with, what is it, Fantastic Four Plus One?
Yeah.
I assume that was real because there was another group. I'm paging through the... I'm really glad they have an index at the... They call it the Funky Index.
Yeah.
The back of this. There was a group called Funky Four Plus One, which did exist, but that wasn't the same... Like, they didn't have the same relationship with Grandmaster Flash, and they weren't the same people, obviously. So, I think I got that mixed up. So, obviously, you can see that there's a very direct influence on real groups and people, but they're not the exact same correlation.
Yeah, they're almost like, I wouldn't say parodies, but like allegories for them.
Yeah. And there were a couple other instances where, like the Notorious Three, who kind of become like their rivals near the end. Yeah. I don't think that was a real group either, but... something that they kind of got at, I think it might have been about halfway through the episodes, was, you know, once that blackout happens in New York City that lasted for like a day or so, and everybody was looting all the stores, all of a sudden a lot more people ended up with turntables and DJing equipment. There was this explosion of like amateur groups coming out with all these names, like the Funky Three and all this other, you know, Hip Hop Five and whatever the hell, I'm just making up shit. But that explosion of all these crazy names of amateur groups, I think that was based on, you know, historically, like I said, there was an actual group called Funky Four Plus One. But then if you look at all the other groups that were named around that area around that time, they all have these like very similar names to what they kind of make fun of in the show.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that blackout did actually kind of lead to more of an explosion of that hip-hop genre, because so few people had access to, you know, dual turntables and stuff.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wait, they're free now.
Vulture.com has two really good articles that we kind of pulled from a little bit in terms of background after watching this show. One of them is, what is it called? Separating Fact and Fiction, and Netflix is The Get Down. This explains a lot of the things like, here's this thing in the show, here's like what it might be based on. And they do talk about the blackout being a thing, but I didn't see any, at least in this article, I didn't see any connection with a lot of people ended up with equipment after this. I think it was a really convenient storytelling thing in the show for that to happen. But I don't know if that's actually what happened. But the blackout itself was real.
Yeah, I remember, because they showed actual news footage.
Yeah.
That's another thing in the show that did, I don't know if it helped or made me more confused with the fact and fiction, is they would occasionally splice scenes in the show with actual footage from the 70s of these related events, like the blackout, you know, the destruction of the Bronx in general.
And the heat of the summer and stuff.
Yeah, the heat wave of the summer, all the graffiti taggers,
yeah.
the gang warfare.
Yeah, they mixed a lot of like real B-roll footage from the 70s with like stuff, some pieces that were recreated for the show, and then kind of mixed them all together. And it feels really authentic when they do it that way. And that kind of makes me think too of, I guess, a big... visual, I don't even know what to call it, like an ongoing theme, I guess, in the show is the whole graffiti thing. You were saying graffiti artists. I think that there's definitely a cultural connection between the graffiti and the music.
For sure.
And that was a real thing, and I think they do really strongly, you know, keep pounding in that connection in the show.
Yeah, I mean, to the point that like at the beginning of every episode, it shows the episode's title in graffiti. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting way to go about it.
Speaking of, I guess, stuff based on real events, the gang that it always mentions in the show is the gang called the Savage Warlords. And although they're not real, they are based off that sort of gang name thing in the 70s. There was tons of different rival gangs. There was like the Savage Skulls, the Black Assassins, the Grim Reapers, the Royal Javelins. And in fact, I watched a really good documentary on the sort of New York borough gangs in the 70s called RoboKings, which I recommend you watch. It's actually probably a good kind of historical pairing with this show, because it shows how even the gang lifestyle is connected with hip-hop music very early on.
Well, something that article I was mentioning a few minutes ago, they actually do mention the gangs, and they say Rubble Kings. That documentary does recount some of this stuff. So you're very on point there. It does say that those kind of groups kind of fizzled out earlier in the 70s. So by the time this show takes place, groups like the Savage Warlords would actually probably not even be around.
Would probably be kind of faded out.
Yeah, but...
plot devices.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I hear you.
Did you want to talk about the Kung Fu stuff at all?
Yeah, I think I would have to arguably say probably the most interesting character in the show is this guy, Shaolin Fantastic. I don't think we even mentioned him yet. I don't know why.
Well, we've mentioned him a couple of times, but we haven't gone in depth about who he is.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, he's sort of...
he's the apprentice.
Zeke's or Ezekiel's spiritual guide, and also, yeah, as you were saying, the apprentice of...
Grandmaster Flash. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, his role in the show, it's very interesting. He himself is an apprentice to Grandmaster Flash, who, because he wants to become a great DJ, but then he also brings Ezekiel in with him into this world of hip-hop because, yeah, he wants to be a DJ, but he needs to find what Grandmaster Flash refers to as a wordsmith to actually, like, write the raps, I guess. Because the DJ himself doesn't do both, necessarily. And his character is really, I wouldn't say eccentric, but he's influenced very heavily by, like, 70s martial arts movies, like Enter the Dragon and Bruce Lee and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Why is this black kid, like, into, you know, kung fu martial arts? But I guess in doing research, and by research, I mean Googling for 5 seconds, there actually was a deep connection between kung fu and sort of urban culture in the 70s because of how popular Bruce Lee's sort of kung fu movies were at the time. So
yeah, and again, this is another Vulture article that we found. The story behind the Get Down's Kung Fu connection. It's a good one. I wasn't really aware that there was this much kung fu influence culturally at that time, but reading through like the reasoning behind it, it makes a lot of sense. One of the choreographers for this show, Rich Talluega, I'm probably butchering that name, he told in this article, they did like a phone interview with him, and he says, quote, "What's funny is he slapped Hollywood upside the face because he made Hollywood come to him. Man, us brown people, us black people, we found a hero that superseded the pale-faced Hollywood media. Bruce Lee was like, you know what? I'm Chinese, I'm brown, and I can whip your ass." So it's a lot of, and we've talked extensively on the show about blaxploitation around a similar time frame, maybe not even 5 years prior to when the show takes place. And I think there's a similar thing going on here of like the empowerment of a non-white, more or less superhero type character in film. And I think audiences like the characters in this show, like Shaolin Fantastic, I think they really grabbed hold of that and really embraced it. And it's very clear through his character that he takes a lot of influence from those sorts of movies.
Yeah, there's another quote in here that I find interesting that's actually a rap line by Dead Prez, where he said, quote, "They say karate means empty hands, so then it's perfect for the poor man." And I think that shows how karate and these kung fu movies resonated with black youth, because these movies were, and Bruce Lee in general, were about, like, you know, self-reliance and discipline, which echoed the same sort of mantras that were preached by the Black Power movement in the late 60s and early 70s about, you know, being proud of your heritage, but at the same time being disciplined in your actions and not doing bad things because it reflect poorly not just on you, but on your you know, ethnicity, your racial group, your community, whatever.
A code of ethics, basically.
Exactly. And I think that sort of code of ethics translated to these kung fu movies and taught a lot of young black kids about, you know, self-discipline and self-worth and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yay. Yay for Bruce Lee.
Yay. Should we discuss the song that Mylene... Well, okay, so Mylene, Papa Fuerte's niece and Zeke's girlfriend, she's the daughter of a priest. He's very much against disco music. She wants to become a disco singer, so obviously that's going to create some friction. You said earlier that they focus almost equal time on her and Zeke throughout the series. I would say he probably gets more, because it's more about that, but that she definitely gets a lot of screen time as well. Trying to find, you know, a producer, find a record label, you know, to get her voice out there, be his disco singer. I think the very slow build up to that song throughout the series, I think, is kind of interesting as well. And the song itself, you know, I think the compromise that they end up making is that, well, Mylene's family doesn't necessarily want her to go away, to stray away from her roots in the church. But then they say, well, okay, so we make it a gospel disco song, which they do. And I think they did a great job with it.
Yeah, it's funny because that actually kind of, there was actually a handful of disco singers that did kind of bridge that gap. Like Loleatta Holloway and Alberta Walker. They actually had successful careers singing in both genres.
There you go.
Yay.
I will also point out that I found it interesting that it was in one of, like, maybe episode one or two. It must have been episode two, maybe. When she first sings in the church and gets Jackie Moreno's attention. That they sing "For the Grace of God, Go I," I think it is.
Yeah. "Before the Grace of God, There Go I," or something.
Yeah, the song by Machine, that's like a disco song by Machine that we have mentioned before in the show.
Huh.
It's funny because I think it's extremely intentional that she sang that song from the show's perspective, because the lyrics of that song basically describe a very similar character who she is. So, okay, I don't know if you remember this song, Kyle, but...
Vaguely.
Which one did we talk about it in? It's the song that's about the overprotective parents in the Bronx who are raising their daughter, and by being overprotective, then she, whatever, leaves, and I don't remember if she becomes a prostitute or whatever, but...
Oh my gosh, I totally don't remember what episode. It was an episode about... I thought it was an episode about, like, singers in the genre that weren't... necessarily black. Is that what it's about? I
don't know. No, it was something completely different. It was songs that wasn't songs that were banned, but it was something about controversy, because I know that song has a couple of controversial lyrics. Anyway, so the entire story that's told in that song is like very similar to Mylene. And so it does make a lot of sense for her to be singing that. So, and then at the time, when I was watching that episode of the show and she starts singing this song, At the time I was still thinking that most of this was historically accurate. So I was thinking, oh, maybe that's where this song came from.
She's that singer.
It's because of that. But then, you know, obviously not. I think they do that a lot in like musicals and stuff, where they'll have a song where lyrically, it, you know, there's a lot of correlation with what the characters are experiencing and stuff like that. So yeah, I just found, I don't know, that was just a connection I found interesting. Good choice.
Cool. Yeah, this show, I swear, all the way up to the end, it was confusing me. It did such a good job of, like, mirroring real people and real events that I was just like, is this based on real people? Are these people non-existent?
Yeah.
I honestly thought, like, wow, I must not know shit, because, like, obviously these people must be real, yeah, and I don't know who they are.
Yeah, that's how I felt for most of the... Well, so she was like, well, there's a lot of stuff I don't know, but I realized, oh, well, it's because it's not real.
Yeah, like, I remember even in the, I think it was even in the first episode, they mentioned Mylene has, like, a musical idol called Misty Holloway, who's, like, a disco singer. And
yeah,
in the episode, Zeke is trying to find, like, a rare record of hers, a rare remix of her record, but Shaolin is also trying to grab that same record at the behest of... holy shit, I keep getting his name wrong.
Grandmaster Flash.
Donnie Hathaway. Yeah. Grandmaster Flash, who I think stole Donnie Hathaway's hat.
That might be true.
I just had the worst thought in the world. Like, when Donnie Hathaway jumped out the window, like, his hat came off and, like, fell on the ground, and then Grandmaster Flash just comes along and is like, that's a nice hat.
God damn it.
It's like the worst. It's like the worst thing ever.
Funk Radio. Oh, we joke about suicide.
Funk Radio. We make up horrible facts about people.
So, but Donnie Hathaway, he died in 1979, which I think was. I want to say this show, this, at least the episodes in so far have taken place in like 77 or 78. So, Donnie Hathaway still would have been alive at this time. See, well, we tie it back into facts. So you were talking about Misty Holloway?
Yeah. So she has this idol, Misty Holloway, and she has a song that she likes called Far, Far Away. And I just keep thinking, I'm like, well, how the hell do I not know about this artist? It was driving me crazy. And then come to find out, she's not a real artist. She's just a fictional artist in the show. Yeah. But I guess she's kind of supposed to be based off of Donna Summer.
Which is funny, because I think they talk about Donna Summer as well in the show.
I thought they did too, so, yeah.
I guess it's supposed to just be another popular disco singer at that time.
True. Here's an interesting spoiler. Apparently, in the next... I don't know if these episodes are considered like one season, or if it's like the first half of a season, but they're saying in the next... release of episodes, we'll say the character of Misty Holloway is actually going to show up in the show.
Oh.
And she's going to be played by Hamilton star Renee Elise Goldsberry. You know Hamilton, that big play that's really popular right now?
Yeah.
So that's interesting news.
I don't know why, but for some reason I assumed when this came out that this was just like a mini-series of like that was only encapsulating 6 episodes and that would be it. I don't really know why. Maybe because they just didn't... It doesn't say, like, season one. So yeah. I just assumed, okay, this is just, like, a one-off thing. But Netflix does show that there is more coming at some point. I think maybe next year. I don't remember when it said.
Hopefully sooner, but yeah.
So there are more episodes coming, which is awesome. Because this is a really great show.
Yeah.
Wikipedia does say the first part of its first season consists of 6 episodes. So it very well could be, like, a season one. Part one or something.
Well, that's my guess is they're just waiting and releasing the second half later on or something. I know they've done that for a couple other shows, like I'm trying to remember what else. There was a show they just released where it was like only 12 episodes, but they're releasing like another 12 soon. It's still the same
on Netflix season.
Yeah.
Oh.
I forget. Trying to think of what other people we haven't covered that were interesting. I know we didn't really mention them, but there are also a couple of minor characters in the show. There's, I guess, the other members of the Fantastic Four Plus One that we have not mentioned at all.
Well, they're secondary characters. They're
cute. They're cute minor characters. They're like all Zeke's age, so they're all... I don't know. I never really got a good 100% sense of how old they were supposed to be. I assume like 15...
16, I think, but Zeke is probably like 17 or maybe 16. I wouldn't really say he's much younger than that. He seems young, but they're also talking about like internships and thinking ahead to college.
True.
So I would say he's probably 16 or 17. The others seem like they're a few years younger than him.
Yeah. There's that one kid that sounds like Michael Jackson. I was like, damn, he's like 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, speaking of, I guess, internships, that was a really interesting part of the show. Zeke ends up getting an internship with this guy who's like, I don't really know what he was supposed to be. He's like a advisor to Congressman Koch, who was running for mayor.
And he's played by the guy.
He's played by the guy who plays the president in House of Cards.
Yeah, I couldn't like disconnect that in my brain.
I know, I just saw him as the same guy, exactly. but he plays this guy who's like a huge asshole, but he... long story short, Zeke is like late for his first day on the internship. He gets... the guy's like, fuck you then. Zeke's like, no, fuck you. I'm gonna get this internship. And the guy's like, okay, you got balls. Come to dinner. We'll talk about shit. I do the best synopses. And then he ends up giving Zeke this horribly, horrible, like, morally corrupt speech about how, oh, if you really want to make it, you basically have to disconnect your emotions and dump your friends and family, because that's the only way to be successful.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was a really fucked up speech. And then Zeke's like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm just like, really? I mean, maybe he kind of, interpreted it his own way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that part of his character arc, I was like, why is he agreeing with this guy? This guy's an asshole.
Well, I think he does see that he has potential, because that's kind of what all the adults are saying to him through the entire show. And, that is one of his biggest struggles in the show is, do I go to college and be academically successful and get a good job and stuff and get out of the Bronx? Or do I embrace my roots? Do I embrace the Bronx basically and, become, a popular music artist in a genre that people don't even understand yet? And so there's that big conflict that he has throughout. I think toward the end, he does start to embrace like the internship thing and like, okay, he does have to start growing up and thinking about being responsible career wise. They kind of end the show on the note of, well, we can do both.
Yeah, like he's kind of playing both fields.
But in the end, I don't know if that's really possible.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's a, I don't know how much more there is to recap, I guess. But yeah, it's a really good show. We recommend you guys watch it if you guys have Netflix. A lot of good young actors in it.
If you're still listening to this episode and didn't click out of it, tell us that you made it all the way through on Facebook at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or if you're listening to this on another platform such as Mixcloud or SoundCloud, if you can, give us a comment there and tell us something that you liked about this show, either the Get Down or Funk Radio. Just something that you like. Even a fucking snack that you like. Just tell us. Tell us something. We're desperate.
Every episode we end with the "we're so lonely, please talk to us."
Jeez. All right. We've talked long enough. And you've listened long enough.
Yep.
Bye.
This has been your host, Kyle. Bye.
This is Peter. Bye.
Bye.